Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Shadowtown Congregation, known as the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is June 17, 2023, or it is the 29th day of Sivan, 2027. We will start our first service today with, we'll have our prayer, and then we'll go into our service. It's going to be taken from the, it's going to be entitled the 24th chapter of Matthew and the signs of the Yahshua's coming. Okay. That's on page 174 of Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2. Okay, it says the 24th chapter of Matthew and the signs of the Yahshua's coming. And as he sat upon the Mount of the Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And the Yahshua answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Yahshua, and shall deceive many. And you shall hear of the wars and rumors of the wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For the nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in the divers places. All these are the beginning of the sorrow. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated for all the nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel. Okay, now, you know what I do with that word gospel? I give you the true meaning of it. And I'll do it right here. And this plan of the salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua of the new and living way, Hebrews 10, 14 through 29, especially Hebrews 10, verse 19 and 20, of the kingdom. Now, this is the key. The kingdom here on earth that is set up in these last days is called the Tabernacle of David. It's the kingdom of David. And it's the kingdom of David. And the prophecy is in Daniel 2, 44 and 45. And this kingdom has a special message. And this kingdom is a kingdom that has a commission that it has to participate in the harvesting of the saints in the last parabolic hour. And this kingdom has to come forth and be purified and sanctified and made white on all of its leaders before they can participate in the leading out of the harvesting, starting with the first fruits harvest of the Seventh-day Adventist 144,000. So now, when you have that in order, then you find that harvest recorded there in Isaiah 66, verse 16 through 20, 22. You'll find it there. And then as soon as the 144,000 are harvested, Yahshua is sitting upon the throne of David, and the 144,000 are sitting up on 144,000 thrones. Each one of those 144,000 has their own individual throne, because they have a work to do in the way of a prophet, priest, and king. They've got to prophesy. They've got to They got to be a priest. They got to be an officiating for those Gentile brethren of theirs that they're going to bring into the kingdom. And then they're individual kings sitting up on their own throne. Okay, so you got 144,000. So it says, and this gospel, the preaching of the new and living way, Hebrews 10, 19 and 20, through the brother of Yeshua, of the kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2, 44 and 45, that has been set up in this last parabolic hour, the 12th hour that we're in now, in the days of these kings, it says in Daniel 2, 44 and 45. This ten-toe image, in that period of time, among those ten toes, in the days of these last day kings that are ruling the world, this little stone's going to be hewn out of the mountain without hands, Daniel 2, it's going to strike that image on the feet that represents all world government. And it's going to strike it on the feet, and it's going to crumble, and the little stone is going to become the sole ruler of this world. It's taking the rulership over from those ten kings. That ten means a universal number, means all of those communist nations are ruling for just a short period of time until this kingdom of David is set up and commissioned then to destroy them and destroy the kingdom and to take over. And Yahshua, though, is the power behind it all. He's the one that's sitting upon the throne of David. David is also sitting there upon the throne by Yahshua in the throne room of the house of David, tabernacle of David. Okay, having said all that, let's go ahead now. That was taken from Matthew 24:3-14. And I'll read that last sentence again. And this gospel, promise of salvation through the blood of Yahshua of the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20, of the kingdom. This is the everlasting kingdom of heaven that Yahweh set up through his son Yahshua and antithetical David, his prince. It says, for the this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all of the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Well, when you witness to all nations the plan of salvation, the blood that cleanses it, those that accept it, they are cleansed by the blood that's been offered them, so they can sanctify and get forgiveness of their sins and become sanctified so they can join the saints. For the direct question put unto the Yahshua and his answer as unto the assurance of the second coming and the end of this present world is too plain and self-explanatory for the leaving room for the doubt. For he did not say that the end of the present sinful world was not to come, but he plainly stated that it will come. However, he said before the end shall come that this gospel, okay, which is a mystery, also a mystery. I believe it says in Ephesians, maybe 1:7, a mystery of the kingdom. Yes, Yahshua said, why do you speak to us in parables? He said, because it's for you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, it's not for them to know. That's why I speak to you in parables. So he says, however, he said before the end shall come, this gospel of the kingdom, the signs of the second coming, as foretold in this chapter, shall be preached in all of the world for a witness unto all the nations, and that all the nations shall be converted. No. Let's do it again. Brackets. Not that all of the nations shall be converted, but for a witness, and then shall the end come. Those who teach contrary unto this plain statement of the Master are they of whom he says, any false prophet shall arise and shall deceive many. Furthermore, the Yahshua says, for as the lightning cometh out of the east and shines even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Matthew 24:27. While some of these false prophets make a complete denial of his coming, others dare say he has already come. Still others claim that no one shall see him when he comes, but he shall establish his kingdom on the earth, and this world will never come to an end. But we ask the question, is Yahshua telling an untrue story? Are all these false prophets fulfilling his prediction rather trying to deceive the saints concerning his coming and overthrow their faith in the and overthrow their faith in the blood of the Yahshua covenant and the Master's word, and thus defraud them of the crown of the eternal life? For if these are not the deceivers of whom he speaks, then who are they? Speak to God, if he is so good about coming in through the back door with negatives. He could have very, very easily quoted that last sentence. For these are the deceivers of whom he speaks. That's all he has to say. Instead, if these are not the deceivers of whom he speaks, then who are they? All he has to say is, for these are the deceivers of whom he speaks. That's all he's got to say. To be in a positive term. If such workers of the iniquity dare try for the contradiction of his plain language, as in this instance, may it not be expected that they shall attempt for the overthrowing of the entire truth of the Bible? Okay, when Yahshua shall come as the lightning that cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, for these false prophets shall be ashamed. For the Revelator also declares, behold, he cometh with the clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierce him. That is, they that pierce him shall be resurrected prior unto his coming. See Daniel 12:2, and all the kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him. Even so, hallelujah. Revelation 1:7. Yes, our Yahshua shall come, and we shall see him as he is. Well, you could have very well said, for the Yahshua, our Savior, our King and Emancipator and Redeemer, shall come, and we shall see him as he is. And it shall be said in that day, lo, this is our Yahshua, the Son. We have waited for him, and he will save us. How is he going to save us? By his blood. This is Yahshua, for we have waited for him, and we will be glad and rejoice in his salvation by his blood. That's the only way of salvation. Isaiah 25:9. For though these false prophets and sinners do not want to see him come, they must. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains and said unto the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:15-17. And so shall the end come unto the sinners, but not unto the Yahweh's people. For the Yahweh himself shall be sent from the heaven. This is talking about the Father. For the Yahshua, the Son himself, shall descend from the heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of the Yahweh. And the dead in the Yahshua shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds for the meeting of the Yahshua in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. For the sinners that day shall be a fearful day, and for them shall he come as a thief in the night. Verily not so for those who wait for him. For, speaking of the great persecution that overtook his people in the Dark Ages during the 1206 years of Daniel 7:25, for he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in the heaven. Now what would that sign be? The falling of the stars, for one thing. After the stars fall, then you can start looking for the Son of Man to appear. And the stars fell in 1833, William Miller year. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the heaven with the power and great glory, and he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the one end of heaven unto the other. Matthew 24:29-31. Now when you see that word elect, it only is referring to the 144,000, because they were preordained by an election of grace to come forth at an appointed time as a purified people, representing the first fruits harvest of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So it says, and he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect, the 144,000, from the four winds, meaning from the four corners of the earth, and from one end of the heaven unto the other. You mean heaven is here on earth? One end of heaven to the other? Yes, it is. It means the atmosphere right here. The air that we breathe. This is the heaven above us. That belongs to this earth. This is the heaven it's talking about. Matthew 24:29-31. For the Master, looking forward unto this generation, said, there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars. Luke 21:25. Thus, immediately after the tribulation, the great persecution, the sun is to be darkened. I put the present tense verb is instead of the past tense adverb was, because we're dealing in the present tense. On the 19th of May, 1780. So let us read that again. They give us a past date. Immediately after the tribulation, the great persecution, the sun was to be darkened. On the 19th of May, 1780, this prophecy was fulfilled, quoting from the great controversy. Almost, if not altogether, alone, as the most mysterious and as yet unexplained phenomenon of its kind, stands the dark day of the May 19, 1780, as a most unaccountable darkening of the whole visible heavens and atmosphere in the New England. An eyewitness living in the Massachusetts describes the event as follows. In the morning, the sun rose clear. It was soon overcast, for the clouds became lowery and from them black and ominous. As they soon appeared, lightning flashed, thunder rolled, and a little rain fell. Toward 9 o'clock, the clouds became thinner and assumed a brushy or coppery appearance. And earth, rocks, trees, buildings, water, and persons were changed by this strange, unearthly light. For a few minutes later, a heavy black cloud spread over the entire sky, except a narrow rim at the horizon. And it was as dark as it usually is at 9 o'clock on a summer evening. Fear, anxiety, and awe gradually filled the minds of the people. Women stood at the door, looking out upon the dark landscape. Men returned from their labor in the field, and carpenters left his tool. The carpenter left his tool. The blacksmith his force. The tradesman his counters. Schools were dismissed, and timidly the children filed homeward. Travelers put up at the nearest farmhouse. What is coming? Queried every lip and heart. It seems as if a hurricane was about to dash across the land, or as if it were the day of a consummation of all things. For the extent of this darkness was extraordinary. It was observed as far east as Falmouth. To the westward it reached to the farthest part of the Connecticut and to Albany. To the southward it was observed along the sea coast and to the north as far as American settlements extend. For the intense darkness of the day was succeeded, an hour or two before the evening, by a partially cloud, clear sky, and the sun appeared, though it was still obscured by the black, heavy mist. After sundown, the cloud came again overhead, and it grew dark very fast. Nor was the darkness of the night less uncommon and terrifying than that of the day, notwithstanding there was almost a full moon. No object was discernible, but by the help of some artificial light, which, when seen from the neighboring houses and other places at a distance, appeared through a kind of Egyptian darkness, which seemed almost impervious to the rays, said an eye witness of the scene. I could not help of conceiving at the time that if every luminous body in the universe had been shrouded in the impenetrable shades or struck out of the existence, the darkness should not have been more intense. So at 9 o'clock that night, the moon rose to the full. It had not the least effect to dispel the death-like shadow. After midnight, the darkness disappeared, and the moon, when first visible, had the appearance of blood. May 19, 1780 stands in the history as the dark day. Since the time of the Moses, no period of the darkness of the equal density, extent, and duration has ever been recorded. For the description of this event, as given by the eyewitnesses, is but an echo of the words of the Yeshua recorded by the prophet Joel. 2,500 years previous unto their fulfillment, the sun shall be turned into the darkness and the moon into the blood before the great and terrible day of the Yeshua come. In 1833, 2 years after Miller began to present in public the evidences of the Yeshua's soon coming, the last of the signs appeared which were promised by the Savior as tokens of his second advent. Said to Yeshua, the stars shall fall from the heaven, and John in the Revelation declared, as he beheld in the vision the scenes that should herald the day of the Yahweh, the stars of the day of the Yeshua, the sun, for the stars of the heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casts her untimely fig when she is shaken of a mighty wind. For this prophecy received a striking and impressive fulfillment in the great meteoric shower of November 13, 1833, that was the most extensive and wonderful display of the fallen stars that has ever been recorded. For the whole firmament over all of the United States, being then for the hours in the fiery commotion, for no celestial phenomenon has ever occurred in this country since its first settlement. Whence was viewed with such intense admiration by the one class and the community, or with so much dread and alarm by another, this sublimity and awful beauty still linger in the many minds. Never did rain fall much thicker than the meteors fell toward the earth. East, west, north, and south, it was the same. In a word, the whole heavens seemed in motion. The display, as described in the Professor Stillman's journal, or Stillman's, was seen all over North America. From 2 o'clock until broad daylight, the sky being perfectly serene and cloudless, an incessant play of the dazzling, brilliant, luminous was kept up in the whole heaven. No language indeed can come up to the splendor of that magnificent display. No one who did not witness it can figure an adequate conception of its glory, for it seemed as if the whole starry heavens had congregated at the one point near the zenith and were simultaneously shooting forth with the velocity of the lightning for every part of the horizon, and yet they were not exhausted. Thousands swiftly followed in the tracks of the thousands as if created for the occasion. In the New York Journal of the Commerce of the November 14, 1833, appeared a long article regarding this wonderful phenomenon, containing this statement: "No philosopher or scholar has told or recorded an event, I suppose, like that of yesterday morning, for a prophet 1800 years ago foretold it exactly. It will be at the trouble of understanding stars falling to mean falling stars is the only sense in which it is possible to be literally true. Thus was displayed the last of those signs of his coming, concerning which Yeshua bade his disciples, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near even at the doors. After these things is John beheld, as a great event next impending, the heavens departing as a scroll, while the earth quaked, mountains and islands removed out of their places, and the wicked in terror sought to flee from the presence of the Son of Man." Great Controversy, page 306, 308, 333, and 4. But Yeshua had bidden his people watch for the signs of his advent, and rejoice as they should behold the tokens of their coming kin. And when these things began to come to pass, he said, "Then look up and lift up your head, for your redemption draweth nigh." Luke 21:28. For he pointed his followers unto the budding trees of the spring, and said, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender, and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when you shall see all these things, know that it is near even at the doors." Matthew 24:32-33. While the Savior has clearly pointed out the nearness of his coming unto the generation that shall witness all these signs, he has not left us in the darkness as to how long it will be from the time of the fulfillment of these signs unto that great and glorious event. For he added, "This generation, the one that has seen the signs, shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled." Matthew 24:34. As the generation spoken of by the Yeshua is about to pass away and the kingdom of the everlasting life ushered in, the searcher of the truth should not neglect his opportunity by the allying of things of the lesser importance to occupy his mind or time. Committed unto the SDA denomination for the preaching or teaching of the gospel, parentheses, plan of the salvation to the blood of the everlasting covenant of the new and living way of the Yeshua, Hebrews 10, 19 and 20 in this generation, and the signs of the times as in the Matthew 24 was committed unto the Seventh-day Adventist denomination since 1844. For no other body of the people has had the burden of the message that is taught in this chapter. For the signs and the end of the world and the urgency of a speedy delivery in this generation, therefore, whatever commendation or condemnation is written for the servant in the Matthew 24 cannot be applied unto another people. Furthermore, as the rest of the Christendom had fallen by the 1844 because they rejected the messages that were sent unto them, and thus Yahweh would not let light shine through them since that time, it is evident that the gospel, or the teaching of the plan of salvation, the brother everlasting covenant of Yahshua of the Matthew 24 chapter of Matthew, could not have been preached by any other people. Therefore, the statement concerning the servant in the following verse is applicable only unto the foregoing denomination. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household to give them unto the world meat in the due season? This is, we got a little problem here. This parenthesis, where Vitihala says to the world. Let's read this again. Who then is a faithful and wise servant? His master hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season. Okay, the servants are the prophets. They're the prophets in charge of the house of Israel. And this them is the laity, the Seventh-day Adventist membership of that Adventist church that this faithful servant or wise servant that is presiding over. This is the Adventist denomination, not the world. So Vitihala, he said, when he wrote this, he should have done it right. He should have known to have done it right. Who then is as a faithful and wise servant? First I put the preposition as a faithful, meaning it has a question about at least two different servants who are being questioned. And Yahshua has come and he's found that two of them vying for the leadership of his church. And that happened at Gilead Center, Conner, Texas, 2002. This is met its fulfillment. And but if you leave the preposition out, you don't know that you're talking about two or more servants. Who then is as a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household for the giving them the membership meet in the due season? Present truth. Matthew 24:45. Note that there is a question as to whom this faithful servant could be. If that people under whom primarily this gospel or this committee, this plan of salvation, the brother of the everlasting covenant, or the teaching of the new and living way was committed, had been faithful, then the following promise would not have been theirs. For it says, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Now, if you find out in the parable of Matthew and Luke, you'll find out that there's a parable about 10 servants. Yeshua went into a far country, and he left his goods with 10 servants in one place. Means universal. 10 means worldwide. But in another place, in Luke, he says there's 3 servants he left his goods in charge of. That 3 servants means a locality. Means in one place, like the United States, exclusively. But the 10 servants means in all the nations of the world. He says, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. Okay, now this is who we have been called to represent. Here the house of David, tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, Matthew 24:46-47. For the significance of all his goods is the finishing of the gospel. So it says bringing everlasting righteousness and ushering in the everlasting kingdom of the Yeshua, Daniel 2:44-45. What a wonderful promise. Verily observe the danger of losing this everlasting glory. And if that evil servant shall say in his heart, this is antitypical Esau, he's the firstborn of Isaac over Jacob. My master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and eat and drink with the drunken, Matthew 24:48-49. For the servant singular that shall begin to smite his fellow servants, plural, signifies the leadership. The angel of the church of the latter sins, Brother Steady Johnson, at the Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, 2002, starting at the Passover, just met its fulfillment. Those who have the charge of the household, really the servants, plural, apply unto the ministry with that leadership by the unfaithfulness of that servant, the teaching or the preaching of the plan of salvation, or the teaching of the plan of salvation of the everlasting covenant, has been delayed. For the generation is about to pass, and their work is years behind. For the result is that the delay has not been expressed by the action only, but it is even said, my master delayed his coming. And as one sin leads unto another, the doctrine of the health reform, eating foods that have been devitalized by the modern invention, the dainties of the Bible, etc., indulging fleshly lust, has been largely disregarded, thus fulfilling the words, ate and drank with the drunk. For the diet, and that's exactly what the diet of Kermit, Texas. The whole church had the diet of Babylon. I mean, they eat in all the Babylonian restaurants in all the towns and cities where they lived and traveled. They eat whatever they want. For the doctrine of the health reform is said to be the right hand and arm of the third angel's message, and that the medical work is the right hand of the message. For the idea of the health reform is a thing of the past, so far as the church as a body is concerned. And the leadership cares little, but that is not the worst for this unfaithful servant of the Yahweh, has even dared stretch his hand over the gulf to form an unlawful alliance of the denominational medical institution with those of the world who are bitterly opposed unto the idea of the health reform, right hand and arm of the Third Angel's Message, for the very channel which was instituted for the upholding and carrying out that part of the work is being bound by a confederacy, and now in the order for the maintaining of this alliance, it has been compelled to sacrifice the very principle for which it was organized. Thereby, Yahweh's agency for the treating the sick and preventing the disease by the helpful living and divine healing through the obedience of the truth has been substituted by the drug. Thus the devil has cut off the right hand and arm of the Third Angel's Messenger, and by this cunning device has robbed the church of the Yahweh of its medical institution. Medical, drugs, pharmacopoeia, this is evil. Adventist church should have never treated in their sanitarium the natural healing methods for the medical institutions. They did it. And Betty Bittyhoff is upholding it here. Bittyhoff was a general conference man. People don't realize it. When Bittyhoff joined the Seventh-day Adventists in 1919, that's when the president of the general conference at that time was running the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And Bittyhoff joined those men and became one of the elders of those men that was of the Jesuit order. He joined them, and he was operating as a general conference officer or a minister, Bittyhoff was, at the time that Yahweh called him out in 1930 from the Adventist Church. Bittyhoff was nothing but a general conference trainee. He had joined them. He didn't join Ellen G. White's remnant when he joined the Adventist Church. He joined up those general conference Jesuits that had taken over the Adventist Church in 1890. So about 20 years after the General Conference had taken over the Adventist Church, Bittyhoff came along and joined the General Conference. That's the only thing he needed to join. What a calamity. What a loss. But not the Yahweh's faithful people at such a time as this come up unto the help of the Yeshua against the mighty. How a body of the people with so much light can become so blind is beyond the human understanding. It is a mystery. There's your mystery. Had they, those who were charged with this great responsibility, been faithful unto the trust committed unto them, the everlasting blessings found in the following verse would have been theirs, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But unto him who neglects his master's commission, the Yeshua of that servant shall come in a day which he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and upon him his portion with the hypocrite, there shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Matthew 24:51. Had they taken heed unto the last urgent message sent them, calling for the decided changes in these things, the following chapters, Matthew 25, would have been prophetically different. The 10 virgins, Matthew 25. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto the 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth for the meeting of the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. For they that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil and their lamps with their, in their vessels with their lamps, while the bridegroom tarried. They all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go you out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and flamed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answer saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather unto them to sell and buy for yourself. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage. And the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, Master, Master, open up unto us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know ye not. Watch ye therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Matthew 25:1-13. Observe that the 25th chapter is a continuation of the 24th. Mark the word then, meaning the time. They fulfill the prophetic words contained in Matthew 24:48-51. The virgins are a figure of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, number 10, has a symbolic meaning of the universal, the church as a body. Note that they are all virgins. The 144,000 are designated by the same word. See Revelation 14:4, where the word virgin signify that the class represented by them, 10, are not those who were called out from the battle, fallen churches, at the time that the cry is made. For if they were to come out of the Babylon by the call, come out of her, my people, Revelation 18:4, they would have been defiled with women, fallen churches, and therefore could not be called virgins. Thus the message of the midnight cry must find them in the house of the Yahweh as virgins, in other words, born and raised on pure doctrine from one church. And that would be Seventh-day Adventist from the birth on up. That's the only religion they ever knew. For the midnight cry was first proclaimed prior unto 1844. And the coming of the bridegroom was Yahshua's coming unto the most holy place and in the heavenly sanctuary for the investigative judgment of the saints. The investigation then in the two sessions, first is judgment for the dead, and second for the living. I might go back over that. First for the judgment of the dead in the 10th parabolic hour, 1844, until the 12th parabolic hour, 2002. And the second for the living, the cry. So that's the judgment of the living, the second be for them that came up in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. The cry must be repeated, otherwise we would have no present truth for the time of the judgment of the living, for the cry for the living being of a greater importance for the world than the one for the dead. And as the virgins are a figure of the living church, the parable must have a direct application for the church at this present time, for the coming of the bridegroom, for the judgment of the living. Verily, indirectly, it points back unto the commencement of the midnight cry as the first angel's message of the judgment for the dead. For the messages being of the same event, judgment, both for the living and for the dead, are called a midnight cry. The same is proven by the parable itself. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at the midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, throw you out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. Note that they slumbered and slept. Before the cry was made, in the summer of 1844, midway between the time when it was first thought that the 2300 days would end on March 21st and the second date, October 22nd of the same year, this period they applied as being the tarrying time, that marked that the cry had been going on for some a year for the message by the miller, and the turning time was applied at its close after they had discovered their miscalculation, which is contrary for a proper application of the parable. For according unto the parable, they tarried before the cry was made. Therefore, the turning time must be the judgment for the dead before the bridegroom came to the investigation of the living, in which time the ten virgins developed, so that it is the time in which they all slumbered and slept. Well, I guess there was time. The judgment for the dead was 1844. The judgment for the living was 2002, about 158 years apart. This application is also in the perfect harmony with the message for the later sins. See Revelation 3:14-19, Isaiah 52:1-2. And the foregoing application, if the foregoing application is correct, then at the end of the tarrying period, or just prior for the commencement of the judgment of the living, there must be a message cry, and if the virgins are a picture of the church as a body in the time of the cry, then the message must be for the Seventh Day Adventist Church only. This is also proven in a great controversy by the H.G. White, page 425, and as much as there is just such a cry presented in the Shepherd's Rod, volume 1, it not only shows that the application of the parable is correct, but it also proves that the Seventh-day Adventist Church to be the house of the Yahweh. We're on page 182. They all slumbered and slept, talking about the five wise and the five foolish virgins. For this statement by the Master proves that the Seventh-day Adventist Church as a body has been asleep, being in a perfect harmony with the previous explanation of the 24th chapter of the Matthew. Five were foolish and five wise. Number 10, being a symbol of the church as a body. For the number 5 and 5 mean half and half. For the denomination numbers at the present time, a little over 300,000. Half of this number would be about 150,000 if we should subtract the dead material backsliders, but still on the church record, the number derived after such deduction would be about 144,000. Thus again, it proves that 144,000 are the five wise virgins, and the foolish ones are they who shall fall under the destroying weapons in the hand of the five men. But the wise took oil in their vessel with their lamps, for the oil is a symbol of the Spirit of Yahweh in the form of a message or truth, for it is the substance that gives the light, as the prophetic word of the Yahweh, as a lamp must be a symbol of the heart into which the word oil is being retained, for the trimming of their lamp is the trimming of their hearts, that is, their conscience being aroused, they begin to show interest, but only five of them had an extra supply of oil in their vessel as they started out to meet the bridegroom, for the lamps of the foolish ones went out, and as they found themselves in the darkness, it made their progress impossible. Now the question arises, what made their lamps go out, and why could they go backwards and not forward? As the message of the judgment for the dead was the present truth since 1844, at the beginning of the judgment for the living, when the cry was made, it became present truth no longer. Consequently, their lamps went out. They could not move forward because they were foolish. That is, they did not accept the light. The judgment for the living was the all beyond their reach, for the word in the parable proved that they all heard the cry, arose, and trimmed their lamps. Five of them failed to get the supply of the oil because they were foolish, for they did not study for themselves, allowed others to think for them. They chose the easy, popular side and accepted the decisions of the leaders, copied the mistakes of the others, and were thus left without a supply of the oil, robbed of the truth, cheated of the glory, and left in the darkness. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. At last the foolish virgins saw themselves in the darkness. Then they went unto the wise and asked for the oil as a gift. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather unto them that sell and buy for yourselves. For the oil is sold, and there must be something given in the exchange for the obtaining of the supply. For the price they had to pay was to sigh and cry for the abomination done in the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church thereof, give up the sinning, and obey the truth. For their recipe for the value of the exchange would have been the seal of the living Yahweh in their forehead. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. After which came also the other virgins, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, verily I say unto you, I know you not. As the foolish virgins at last came to the door, it is evident that they obtained the oil, learned of the message, that there had been a delay, for the door was shut, and they were left out. Now, why were they unconcerned at first and very zealous at last? For the experience in this instance is about the same as that of the deluge. While the Noah preached the coming of the flood, the world paid little attention to this message. But those who believed went into the ark at a given time and the door was closed. But not long afterwards, signs of the Noah's prediction appeared, and as the drops of the rain began to fall, the wicked multitude became alarmed and rushed for the ark. But the door was closed and they were left out. For the door that was shut is a symbol showing that the probation for the church had closed. Just shortly after, the foolish virgins became alarmed, and at last they were willing to pay the price and buy the oil. But it was not a change of the heart, only the fear of the losing out. For the course of the action had left them without seal. The man with the writer's ink on had passed them by. What a terrible mistake. What a disappointment. Almost saved, but entirely lost. For the coming of Yahshua as our high priest into the most holy place for the cleansing of the sanctuary, brought to view in Daniel 8:14, the coming of the Son of Man unto the Ancient of the Days, and the Ancient of the Days is the Father, on the Day of Atonement, 1844, as presented in Daniel 7:13, and the coming of the Yahshua into His temple. This is the David's temple, and typical of David's temple. This is that temple of David, that is tabernacle of David, that is raised up here in the 12th hour that we're in now. Yahshua sits upon the throne of David in this temple, foretold by the Malachi, are misconceptions of the same event, and this is also represented by coming of the bridegroom into the marriage described by Yahshua in the parable of the 10 virgins of the Matthew 25. Ellen G. White, Great Controversy, 426. For the description by the Daniel applies to the commencement of the judgment. Let's do that again. For the description by the Daniel applies for the commencement of the judgment for the dead. Thirdly, the one by the Malachi 3:1-3 is applicable for the judgment for the living, and then starting in 2002, the Kermit text, all of the same event, Day of the Atonement, cleansing of the sanctuary. For the coming of the bridegroom here brought to view takes place before the marriage. For the marriage represents the reception by Yahshua of his kingdom, the holy city. For the new Jerusalem, which is the capital and representative of the kingdom, is called the bride, the Lamb's wife, said the angel unto the John, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. He carried me away in the spirit, says the prophet, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven, Yahweh. Clearly then, the bride represents the holy city. Well, the holy city in another place is represented by the 144,000 that occupy the holy city. And they're the virgins that marry the bridegroom, is the 144,000. And the virgins that go out to meet the bridegroom are a symbol of the 144,000 in the Seventh Day Adventist Church. How'd you like the way we corrected that? And the revelation of the people of Yahweh are said to be the guests at the marriage supper. If the guests, they cannot be represented also as the bride. For Yahshua, as stated by the prophet Daniel, will receive from the Ancient of the Days in heaven dominion and glory and a kingdom. He will receive the new Yahrus, capital of his kingdom, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Having received the kingdom, he will come into his own as a king and kings, as a king of kings and sovereign of sovereigns, for the redemption of his people, who are to sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob at his table in his kingdom, for the partaking of the marriage supper of the Lamb. Great God, verses 4, 26 and 7. For the virgins were called to meet him, and thus by the faith go in with him to appear before the Father, the great judge. For the seal is the permit. It places their names in the Lamb's book of life, and thus it grants unto them the right to appear before the Father in the judgment, not in the person, but in the figure. Thus, having their sins blotted out, Matthew 24:36-50, are the description of the same event. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh, Matthew 25:13. This has reference unto the time of the judgment, and not of his coming to the earth. For the saints shall know the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming, and the clause for the receiving of the redeemed, as it shall be announced by the Father shortly before his coming. See the Great Controversy, page 640. Summary of the ten virgins. For the number ten being a symbol of the universe, it represents the Seventh Day Adventist Church as a body prior unto the commencement of the judgment of the living at the Passover 2002 in the Kermitaxis, and the sealing period of 144,000. And before the loud cry of the third angel's message, being the period of the first fruits of the harvest, for the five wise virgins were they who trusted in the Yahweh and his word only, having no confidence in man, and were hungry for the truth, searching for the light, and gladly accepting it when it came. Thus they received the seal of the Yahweh's approval, for their sins were blotted out and their lives made sure, for they passed from the condemnation and death into the glory and life eternal, for they are the Yahweh's servants, kings and priests, 144,000 in number. For the five foolish virgins are they who had confidence in men, for they were willing that others should think and study for them, for their love for this world and the things of it exceeded their love for the Yahshua and the world to come. They had no true sense of the awful results of sin. Their zeal for self drowned their zeal for the house of Yahweh and his honor. They were satisfied with their lamps trimmed and but little oil on them, for they saw no necessity for the more light, prophets, truth, or message. For they said in their hearts, we are rich and increased with their goods and have need of nothing. For they were prejudiced against the light upon the word of Yahweh accepted not the truth because the channel through which it came was not of their choice. For the knowledge of the present truth, which the five foolish virgins have possessed since 1844, is the judgment of the dead and was the only oil in their lamp. When the judgment of the living commenced and the cry was made, they were found without this extra oil in their vessels. They had neglected their Yahshua's command. Watch ye therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Thus, when the wise ones started out to meet the bridegroom, the lamps of the foolish went out, for the judgment of the dead had passed. Therefore, it was present truth no more, and thus they were left in the darkness at the beginning of the judgment of the living of the Yahweh. They saw their mistake and rushed for the ark of the safety, but it was beyond their reach, for they knew nothing of the message, and by the time they acquired it, filled their lamps with the oil, there had been a delay. The angel had passed through the city, through the Jerusalem. The church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, the sealing was finished, and the probation for the Seventh-day Adventist church had closed. The door was shut. Thus they were left out. Then they came with these words, Master, Master, open up unto us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Appoint his portion with the hypocrites, there shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. What a disappointment that will be! For it will be noticed at the close of probation for the church and the one for the world are two different events. For the former is a miniature representation of the latter. For the scripture for the preceding one is found in Matthew 25:11-12. But of that final one we read, He that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according unto his works shall be. Revelation 22:11-12. At this time, those who were like the five foolish virgins will say, For the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not safe. Jeremiah 8:20. And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from the north even unto the east, they shall run to and fro, for the seeking of the word of the Yahweh, and shall not find it. Amos 8:12. This brings in verse 50. This hour contact is at the 11th hour. Call number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now.